From time to time here at the Horn, we have what is called in the business a cold opening. This is one of those. It's been a
lovely day in Mount Colby Gone.
No, it hasn't. For reasons that I don't understand. I guess we should get the particulars out of the way first. It's the 8th day of August, 2019. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I previously said there would be no program this evening. I was misshapen. Just ask Agnes. I got no idea why what's going on is going on. I'm utterly and completely and totally flummoxed. So here's the story. No. Gratitude first. Thanks go out to our subscribers for this this 8th day of the month. Our 8th day of the month subscribers are, and big thank yous to them, working. Many thanks to our 8th day of the month subscribers, Nancy and For Earth, Sue and Tom. Thank you to Brendan and Dwayne and Marcia. Thank you all very, very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program each and every month. It is, it's one of the reasons we've been able to stay on the air as long as we have. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. You'll notice there was, like I said, a cold opening. There was no music playing or intro or John Fox saying, here we go, or anything like that. After nearly two decades of this, I've come to the conclusion that one doesn't really so much work on computers as try to have a somewhat meaningful, semi-positive experience with them. They talk about where this, AI is off in the future. Uh-uh. Mm-mm. No. There are ghosts in the machine. So it goes like this. This afternoon, I had a call from my old buddy B-Rez. He's down in Florida now, and he's back in radio. And he does a program every weekend, has to do with solar power and things, the future of sustainable energy. Good for him. And so he said, Bob, could you do me a couple of liners? I said, sure. And just because of everything that's been going on for the last week, I didn't get to them as soon as I meant to. And so he messaged me earlier this afternoon and said, no, really, I got to have them by 4. And I said, okay, they're on their way. So I fired up everything here, and I cut him a couple of liners. And the way, just because of the way this setup runs, I had to transfer the audio file from the streaming PC over to the production PC so that I could then email them to B-Rez. And something weird happened. I've got a little portable solid-state drive. It's about 250 gigs. Usually works like a charm. But I guess maybe it's dead or something gone bad or something. Because the streaming PC acted kind of weirdly and I couldn't find it. And then I did find it and got the file transferred onto it. And, click here to eject, if you're on a PC, you know what it is. And then tried to put it into the fab machine. And the fab machine just straight up said, uh-uh. And gave me a notice that a power surge was taking place. And that the device was asking for more power than the port could deliver. Just through a USB port. And so I shut everything all the way down, pulled the thing out. Eventually, I used a thumb drive and boom, boom, got it done, got the audio sent off to BRES. But in the meantime, the streaming PC stopped seeing the sound device that sends this live program to you. On the playback stream, it's a different sound card. Don't ask. And on the other hand, I lost all playback from the production machine. Despite the fact that when you go into sound card settings, it shows that the sound card is playing when you hit the test button. If you open up the weird little Sound Blaster interface, it will tell you that the sound card is either not installed or in use by another app. The short and sweet of it all is that I've been dealing with that for the last 3 hours. And, you know, experiencing male pattern baldness as I do, I now have somewhat considerably less hair in my scalp than I had before. So that's where all of this stands. Now, I wanted to get on the air as quickly as possible and did so at about 45 minutes past the ordinary time. Let me take a moment of just silence here. No, not to thank the Almighty for getting... No, but just so I can... just so I can correct, because I'd given up. And then at the very last moment, I got a flash of non-brilliance and did manage to at least get audio into the streaming PC. So, there we go. I'm here. I really wanted to be here. And I'll mention here this early in the program, the fundraising goal stands at $540. It would be wonderful if we could take that down so that we're not looking at $740 for a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. Now, what I don't know, I do know this. I can't get any call audio. So that means no calls tonight, which I find highly frustrating, given that that we sort of brand this program as conversation radio. Looks like we're into a filibobster. Yeah, it was a USB-C connector. Randy in PA points out, I sent you a prior article on that and how they may overload. Well, apparently that has happened. I hope it didn't kill the sound card. I didn't see any, it had never been a problem before. Oh, well. So, here we are on the 8th of August, 2019. It's just us. But if you've got something to say, you're probably going to have to... you're going to have to email it, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or use the email interface over at headon.live, or you may be able to get through on the chat room. I've got a happy little group in there. Good evening to Anatole and Jimmy and Kiazi and Silent R. Lamar and Otto and Squeaky, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen to simply remain in unfolded space as, Sparky. Thanks, Dave from Talibandiana, telling me loud and clear on Well, everything but FYI, apparently. So, let's see. What do we have? Well, I can tell you from where I stand. Well, you know what I've been dealing with for the last week, and it's monumental stress. But oh, that's true. Ron in Raleigh says, that's why I stopped using standalone audio cards, specifically Sound Blaster, years ago. I use the motherboard onboard audio, because audio cards are the biggest pain in the ass to configure. The element of truth in that, but I needed the connectivity that a standalone sound card gave me. Yeah, oh, well. Okay, thanks for the resend, Randy. Where to begin? Well, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And that gives us an idea of, potential. The first thing that grabbed me was the latest turn of the screw in the ongoing torment of immigrants in this country. Immigrants who bust their asses for little pay and do the hard, dirty work that pampered Americans seem unwilling to do. Almost 700 human beings at 7 Koch Foods poultry plants in and around Morton, Mississippi, were rounded up yesterday. I have not had an opportunity to do the necessary research to find out if it's those Kochs, K-O-C-H. It would not surprise me a nickel's worth if it was. So anyway, the ICE thugs came in. Pretty soon they'll just give up and start goose-stepping and pull the rubber mask off. I don't know. Has ICE learned to whistle the Horst Wessel song yet? There's an obscure reference. But there were 7 plants owned by Koch Foods in and around Morton, Mississippi. The ICE thugs came in and rounded up 700 human beings, working people. They did not bust a single one of the executives who did the hiring. They took the people away, and to the credit, and we don't often think this way in terms of a place like Mississippi, but the community rallied. I give credit even to the churches, because the community rallied to take care of the little children who, as far as I'm concerned, were probably the real targets anyway. Because this disgusting criminal regime run by Nitwit Nero and his little, his little Sejanus henchman, Stephen Miller, classical references, have a thing for tormenting babies. This, of course, from the pro-life gang. And it is, it's damned well disgusting is what it is. And so I saw video footage overnight of little children. One little girl just sitting on the floor of a local school gymnasium with a slice of pizza in front of her, bawling, crying, weeping unconsolably because her parents were taken from her. It was infuriating. But if you wandered around the nastier corners of the internet, you could see that the maggots were jumping and leaping for joy and thrilled and send them back. The adults maybe didn't know what was going to happen to them. But they too were terrorized because they also did not know what was going to happen to their infants, babes in arms, toddlers, preschoolers, all the way up. There's no doubt in my mind that this was done, that terror. I think my German may be a bit rusty. I don't know if Steve from New York is listening. He's usually pretty. He's got a good storehouse of German words. Schrecklichkeit. Schrecklichkeit. And I think it roughly translates as using horror as an instrument of war. There are echoes of it. For instance, if you watch Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now, and you see Marlon Brando there in the shadows muttering, "The horror, the horror," and saying that the Vietnamese had learned to use horror to their advantage, where the U.S. military forces hadn't. Not sure about the accuracy of that statement, but you get the idea. So these wee children were orphaned in a trice, and the community was left to pick up the pieces. Well, it turns out there's a backstory. You know, any time the Trump regime does some evil thing, there's always going to be a backstory. And the backstory in this case is that it probably wasn't an accidental. It was no accident that this particular group of plants, processing plants, mainly chicken products, were targeted by the ICE thugs. Ah, thank you, Steve in New York. Yes, Schrecklichkeit. That was the word. See, it was last year when, having been previously busted, Koch Foods... Anybody in the Horn ad hoc research department want to find out if Chuck and Dave own Koch Foods? I'm just curious. Those evil fuckers. Well, anyway, a couple of years back, Koch Foods was charged with racial discrimination, national origin discrimination, and sexual harassment against the Hispanic workers in the very same facility where this ICE, one of these ICE raids took place. Yep. Thank you to Flavio filling in, and Ron and Raleigh serving as the ad hoc research department. Yes, it's the Koch brothers. The Kochs called the ICE on them because they were complaining about inhumane conditions at the plants. Koch Foods, no. Apparently it's the other, we've got a disagreement here in the research department. Ron in Raleigh says, Koch Foods is owned by Joseph Grendis, a billionaire chicken slaughterer. Mr. Grendis was not arrested. Well, how bad was the racial discrimination, the national origin discrimination, and the sexual harassment in that Morton, Mississippi Koch Foods plant? It was bad enough that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission brought suit against them, alleging that supervisors at the plant, quote, touched and or made sexually suggestive comments to female Hispanic employees, hit Hispanic employees, and charged many of them money for normal everyday work activities. Many of those workers, when they complained, were sacked. Or else they were subjected to other forms of retaliation. So as a result of the suit by the EEOC, Koch Foods paid out a $3.75 million settlement. And much of that money went to the victims. They also signed off on an agreement to put in a training program for employees. They were supposed to set up a 24-hour hotline for reporting discrimination complaints in both English and Spanish. And they were supposed to do it for the over the course of the following 3 years. That settlement decree is still in effect. But Koch is not just in Morton, Mississippi. They have locations in Salem, Ohio. In Morristown, Tennessee, up in northeast Tennessee. Been there. Mike Elk, I know Mike, he writes over at Payday Report, and he's very good at what he does. Mike Elk pointed out that last year, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, maybe this wasn't a Koch outfit after all, sorry. It gets a little confusing. Freshmark got a $200,000 fine from OSHA for three separate incidents where safety guards weren't in place in the Salem meatpacking plant. 1 week later, the ICE thugs raided the plant. Now, some of these plants, surprisingly enough, in 2019. Some of these plants actually have union representation through the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. You may recall Dave from Talibandiana writing a couple of weeks back celebrating the fact that his beloved ex-wife had finally gotten her first union job in a grocery store with the UFCW. Further data. Despite similarities in the names and the fact that both were founded by men named Fred Koch, Koch Foods is no relation to Koch Industries or the Koch brothers. Their founders are two entirely different people. LOL, don't trust anyone named Fred Koch. Well, they get around. You can't blame me for wondering, because this is some pretty evil shit, and it's right. You know, it's right in the wheelhouse of Chuck and Dave when you get right down to it. What happened yesterday was one of the largest raids in over a decade. ICE waited until the first day of school kind of like over in El Paso, people were shopping for the first day of school when 22 people were killed and 24 maimed by a Trump supporter with a gun. No, and by the way, the Trump supporter with the gun and the racist manifesto. His mama, because now we're all going to talk about red flag laws for a while. His mama, the young lad, and see, he's a white boy, so we call him a young lad. The young lad was sort of at loose ends. 21 years old, not in college, out of high school, not working on getting a trade or something that would carry him through life. He was at sea. Not literally, we're talking about Texas after all. A suburb, a nice, safe suburb of Dallas, Allen, Texas. And one day he came home with a semi-automatic assault rifle. And even in tech says, this caused Mama a little bit of concern. So what did Mama do? Mama did the right thing, arguably. It just turned out not to be a useful thing in 2019. Mama picked up the phone and called the Allen, Texas Police Department and said, my boy's brought home this gun. It's one of them AK things or something. And he don't know how to use it. And I'm kind of worried about him having it in my home. What did the police in Allen, Texas do? You already know the answer to this question, because it's a very short answer. Nothing. Not a blessed thing. They said, well, ma'am, this here is Texas in the new 90 states of America, and he is free, white, and 21, and he can have as many goddamn guns as he wants. It's his right as an American. So don't you worry, little mama. He's just exercising his constitutional rights. Now, to be fair, mother didn't say anything about worrying that he would go and shoot up a Walmart 10 hours away. Because he hated Mexicans. She didn't say that he had been typing madly away, probably with one hand on a racist manifesto, blathering on and echoing the words of Donald Trump about people from across the border invading Texas. Yeah, again, that's one of those failures of our civic education. How can you possibly, white, brown, black, whatever, be in Texas and not know? What? Did little dipshit think Texas was some sort of Scandinavian word or something? Yeah, Texas, you betcha. How can Texas be invaded by the people who settled it in the first fucking place? Yeah, well, it's neither here nor there. So they said, don't you worry about it. And the cops didn't do another damn thing. Yeah, some lily-livered, sissy, panty-waist liberal mama done called and worrying about her boy having a semi-automatic assault rifle when every white boy in Texas got two. So that's all just a sort of an aside. But folks were school shopping in El Paso. a pair of parents, as we discussed, got all dead that day because they were going to buy things for their baby girl's first day of kindergarten. And now she's an orphan. Because, well, protecting the tender feelings of a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy old paranoid white men is more important than letting five-year-olds have a mama and a daddy. But back to Mississippi, Stan. So it doesn't appear to be a coincidence that when you've got plants where people who work, and let's be clear. Dan points out, chicken plants. I'll bet payday was either today or tomorrow. All those people taken won't be paid for their work either. There is working in a chicken plant is about as nasty a job as you can come up with in the dictionary of occupational titles in the new 90 states of America. Hateful business. I remember years back, probably 10 years back, one of the animal rights groups snuck a camera into a chicken plant here in West Virginia, and they got footage, they got video of the workers in the chicken plant. It was, of course, a non-union chicken plant. But workers in the chicken plant were torturing the chickens to death. Not just killing them, but taking out all of their anger and their frustration and their hate, kicking chickens, stomping chickens, tearing their beaks off. I mean, it was sick. Because it's a brutal business. One of the more interesting interviews I did at Netroots Nation in Philly a month back was with the group who advocates for more humane treatment of chickens and getting, they try to, if you heard the interview, you know, they try to influence the process by influencing the consumers of the chickens. I don't know if they'd gotten that. Well, hey, there's another little piece of information that an intrepid journalist could track down. Who buys the chicken from the Coke plants in Mississippi? Do they wind up in your chicken McNuggies? Are they in your Taco Bell chicken fajitas? Or do they just go into your Sweet Sue canned chicken and dumplings? I don't know. We might not want to do that because people might feel bad about buying those products then. And, well, where would that poor billionaire be? Right. But for those of us who are parents, if you take a minute and try to imagine your child coming home from the first day of school, all excited because, you know, your baby is seeing her friends again for the or maybe the first time meeting new friends. We've still got first day of school photos, I think, for all of our kids. And I remember them bursting through the door, just absolutely in a frenzy of happy excitement. They had a really, really good kindergarten teacher. And their little brains were just alight with the possibilities, and I remember how Agnes and I smiled at each other. Now imagine No one there to smile. Mama? Papa? And then some lady from the church comes along and says, come with me. And has the unenviable, heartbreaking task of saying, hey, you know, the people from Trump came along and took away your mommy and your daddy, and we don't know when they're coming home. But here's a slice of pizza. Let's go sit in the gym. At least it's air conditioned. Can anybody make a credible argument that that is not fascism in both word and deed? Because it sure seems like it to me. Stephen, New York, subject line ICE. I know we on the left are not supposed to believe in taking the law into our own hands. We are supposed to believe in the do it within the law happy horse shit. But Bob, I've had it. I'm ready to join a vigilante group to protect these immigrant people. I'm ready to join a group to storm the concentration camp and liberate our brothers and sisters and the children. I've lost my capacity to merely talk about this stuff. I know. How do you just sit in the midst of the, you know? And for the most part, most people will say, well, you know, I got $5 or $10. I'll go and find a... I'll go find an agency or a non-governmental organization that's doing the hard work for these folks. There are lawyers out there, and we're not talking about the silk stocking types who harumph at each other and file lawsuits on behalf of the Trump administration in Washington, D.C. These are meat and potatoes lawyers. These are meatball surgery lawyers. These are lawyers who respond at 3 o'clock in the morning when the phone rings them up out of a sound sleep, and they get up and they get dressed and they get on the road because they know that a life hangs in the balance. And yes, there are lawyers like that. And yes, lawyers do respond that way because yes, in 2019 in Trump-merica, lives hang in the balance, and the only thing standing between a human being and their own disastrous demise is a lawyer who isn't in it for the money. Clarence with a good question. Where are the warrants for the Human Resources Department personnel who also violated the law on the books? The arrogance and hypocrisy of the Trump administration is in the stratosphere. Well, those would be white folks mostly, I imagine, Clarence. Mostly. And we're not going to give them any trouble, cuz you know, after all, jobs and the billionaire, he can't be faulted because, well, hell, he's employing people who ain't supposed to be here, so that means that's economically good for him, cuz that means he gets to be a bigger billionaire. Rusty pointing out, the El Paso shooter was wearing ear protection head devices. He was concerned about his hearing during a murder raid. He thought he had a future after the killing. Safety first, Rusty, safety first. Uh-oh, have I gotten on the wrong side of Silent R. Lamar? Now, damn, Bob, you just answered one of the $64 million questions. How America got Texas. I know. Dirty little war involved. Slavery. You see, Mexico had already... That was one of the problems. Mexico had outlawed slavery, and the white folks said, "Nuh-uh, we gotta have slaves." And then you get the Alamo. Casting her mind back in history, Megan says, didn't the Aurora shooter's mother also have an issue? Wasn't she the one who said she wasn't surprised that it was her son who shot up the movie theater because he had issues that she couldn't do anything about even when she tried? Yeah, and then there's Mother up in Newtown, Connecticut. She was the first one that Sonny Boy shot down before he went and massacred first graders. Well, here comes the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Thank you, Ron. Coke Foods supplies Burger King, Kroger, and Walmart. Raise your hands if you're surprised. Yeah, no hands went up. So Flavio caught up with the breaking news portion of this whole story. And that is this. Dozens of immigrant workers, I think about five busloads, have been released a day after being detained in the largest immigration raid in a decade in the United States. This is via the Associated Press. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials say 680 people were arrested in Wednesday's raids, but immigration lawyers say that by Thursday morning, about five busloads of people had been released. The terms of the workers' releases were unclear. It was also unclear whether any of those released were determined to be living in the country legally. ICE officials did not return telephone calls Thursday morning. See, over at ICE, since they are a fascist organization, their operating philosophy is raid first and ask questions later. Pretty white Anglo-American common law principles and concepts like false arrest and false imprisonment. Well, the Trump administration is pretty much counting on other legal niceties like governmental immunity to cover against charges like that because, after all, Mexicans and Guatemalans. Yeah. And this just makes it more evil. They had to know that they would be released. This was a roust. I know that topically there's probably no nexus, but this is the kind of thing that the New York Police Department would do to the gay community back in the 60s and into the early 70s, until finally on one fateful night the community fought back at a place called the Stonewall Inn. And we know, we know what a historic moment that was. But they went in force, the ICE thugs did. They went in with approximately one ICE agent for every worker in the plant. And it was just enough. It was just a reminder. It was like when the mob puts a brick through your window and it's got a note attached that says, nice little house you got, be a pity if something happened to it. From the annals of our classical references, we can go back to ancient Sparta, that sick society. You know, it tells us a lot, for instance, that the gun goobers run around with a decal of a Spartan warrior's helmet, accompanied by that phrase, the wash your melons or whatever it is, melon lave. No, it means come and take it. You can have my guns when you pry them from my cold, dead fingers. Your offer is acceptable. Followed by a Wilhelm scream. Agnes and I have been rewatching the first Men in Black. It never fails to delight. But in that sick culture that is revered, of course, by sick people in America, there was an underclass of Greeks. The Spartans were at the top of the heap, and they were hard and mean and, well, pretty close to straight up, you know, fascist. The state ruled all. Whatever business that anybody was into was at the service of the state. It was militaristic, hateful. The women were as mean as the men. And when little Spartan boys got up about 7 years old, they were taken from their mamas and went to live in barracks with other kids their age. And there they were taught to be even more vicious than they had already become. And part of their viciousness involved the underclass. They were called helots, H-E-L-O-T-S, helots. And part of a young Spartan boy's upbringing was the ritualistic torment of helot families. Little gangs of Spartan boys would bust in the night and assault helot families. And the helots, by the way, were the people who actually made sure that the Spartans could fucking eat. They grew the crops. They worked the land. They brought in the harvest. And they were kept themselves at a level of bare minimum subsistence and kept in a state of constant terror by their Spartan masters. So that all the Spartans had to do was sit around and work on their skills at warfare so that they could go and attack the other, at least somewhat more civilized city-states on the Greek peninsula. If I recall my reading correctly, one of the final manhood tests of a Spartan youth was to go out and straight up murder a helot. There were enough helots that, let's say the senior class of Lycurgus High School, they could all go out and murder a helot, and it really wouldn't make much difference. But by this, they proved their manhood and at the same time made sure that they continued generation after generation the tradition of keeping the helots in a state of constant terror. That's ICE. That's the Trump regime. That's Stephen Miller, first and foremost. That evil, little, vulgar pot of puke. And people from south of the border are their helots. We know what's being done to the minds of the children in the cages, but what was done last night, or night before last, and yesterday will be in the backs of those children's minds when those children have great grandchildren, and the story will be passed down from generation, yea, verily, unto generation. And one of these days, as was it Malcolm X who said it? I don't remember. The chickens just may come home to roost. And that, in turn, is what has scared white North American people from the moment they set foot on this continent and set out to create a helot Spartan society. Oh, and by the way, Coke Foods also retails their stuff. Brother Deacon Ace is sending me some photographs. Coke Foods chicken fries. Well, now we know where Burger King's chicken fries come from, don't we? Coke Foods chicken nuggets. Coke Foods crispy chicken strips. Coke Foods popcorn chicken. Parts is parts, y'all. Lady B with a note, sorry about your computer. And just think, that was invented to make all our lives easier. Anyway, I'm not going to list all the way these communities fuck themselves, but don't those people know how fucked they are? Not the plant owners. They'll find replacements with that broken-up community. Shaking my damn head. Sweetie, you don't cut the main power line to make your son stop playing his electric guitar, and you don't run the immigrants who took the shitty jobs at the local slaughterhouse out of town. And aside from helping to provide already killed and cut meat for the for that community's consumption, they also were buying things from the community's businesses and the local Walmart. In other words, this shit will affect their jobs, too. You know, many in that community voted for the guy who made this happen. You know how many? Guess. Burned to death nuns with no noses should be proof enough that if you're trying to spite others, you only end up spiting yourself. Karma. She'd be a bitch, yo. Indeed. And as I noted, I guess there's even more grieving going on there in Bentonville. I'm sure the Walton heirs have been grieving the loss of profits at their El Paso store right here at Back to School, and now they have to grieve a possible loss of profits in they're in Morton, Mississippi. Some days it's just hard to be a billionaire heir. Todd with a question. Did the processing plant owners, managers face charges for hiring undocumented workers? Well, hell no. What would make you say a silly thing like that? It's not their fault. They just hired the people who showed up. Dang. Silent R. Lamar says, sorry, I must say, I sometimes don't care how my food is prepared, but I draw the line on some other things. Be damned if I'm going to give up meat if my doctor if my doctor says I have to give up meat. Well, doc, I'll die with a smile on my face. I agree no animal should suffer, man or beast. Hey, look on the bright side. They're going to kill you one way or the other. Bad food, bad water, bad air. Wake up, folks. Yeah, but there's a right way and a wrong way to go about it. If I think about it very, very, well, if I could afford to be a vegetarian, but no, I think about the, back when I learned, and again, this is back 10 years or more ago, when I learned about downer cattle. Oh, moo. Yeah, downer cattle. Now, downer cattle are the cows at the CAFOs who are so sick they can no longer stand up. And so when they just drop dead in the feed lot. Well, here it is, dinner time in the central time zones, taking a beating. They'll come along with a front-end loader, or maybe a forklift, and they'll pick up that dead cow, and they'll take it over to a special place for the downer cattle. And your downer cattle, well, they can't be butchered and sold as ribeye steaks or sirloins or filet mignon or anything like that. No, instead, they're butchered and parted out, and they go into your Dendy Moore beef stew and your Campbell's vegetable beef soup and maybe your frozen shredded beef and bean burrito down to the Rippy Mart, because it's just sort of unidentifiable beefishness. And this. If you ask human beings to do inhumane things in inhumane conditions, you will not have good results. And that is why we foist the dirtiest, filthiest, nastiest jobs in the country off onto the newest people to come to the country. Thus has it ever been. Whether it was the Irish, the Italians, the Poles, the Hungarians, the Greeks, and of course, the African American population. Of course. Because there was no choice there. Ron and Raleigh asks, hey, did you know while all this other vile shit was going down, the Trump regime used it as cover to perpetrate another other vile shit? Trump's directed the State Department and USAID to freeze the remaining foreign aid money for the year. Most people you talk to think that we spend a heap of money on foreign aid and would happily eliminate it. The defense budget is $760 billion, while the foreign aid budget is around $2 billion. Foreign aid pays for developmental assistance, global health, narcotics control, and peacekeeping activities. So once again, the Trump regime says, fuck them all. Look, if some maggot leans down to tie their shoelaces, something wicked will come of it. There is no good in this gang of creeps and thugs. No good whatsoever. Megan Helitz and Stephen Miller. Do I even need to ask how the Spartans treated Helot girls? No, don't. And I always thought Stephen Miller was the reincarnation of Joseph Goebbels, but that may be giving him too much credit. Hitler liked dogs. I can't imagine Stephen Miller having a dog. I can't imagine Stephen Miller having a cat. I can't imagine Stephen Miller having a fish. Stephen New York says, it's my fault. It's all of our faults. We insist on having cheap produce and processed food. We really have nobody to blame but our consumerist, capitalist selves. It's all a matter of externalization, Steve. You'll find if you go to Europe that, for instance, there are roving migrant food harvesters. I remember being told, because in the spring, you know, that's Spargel season in Germany, and the Germans go absolutely hog wild over their Spargel being asparagus, and they're particularly fond of white asparagus. To get white asparagus, you have to cover the entire field of asparagus so that the sunlight doesn't reach it. And it's tenderer than the green stuff. And they just adore it. But that's labor-intensive, and I remember being told that Eastern European people travel the countryside raising and harvesting Devise Spargel. I'm sure I just wrecked that phrase, but you get the idea. And this is something that's, you know, 7,000 years old. The rise of agriculture brings about the rise of inequality in the human species. Because where before you were part of a little extended family clan unit, and you knew where to go at which time of the year to gather what fruits and what roots and what nuts and what berries and where the bears lived and where to get the tasty tender rabbits. With the rise of sedentary agriculture, suddenly you have to stay in one place and you farm. And the next thing you know, you're in service to some headman who's had a whispering in the night from some imaginary cloud being in his dreams and tells you that, well, if you don't do what the thing said in his head, that you can't be part of the city anymore. It's nothing new. We just have a way of, you know, when Republicans are in charge, making it a lot more hellish. Darlene in Connecticut says, you know, if we had a functioning fourth estate, it would start calling Stephen Miller what he is to his face, you psychopath. And for effect, also say to his face, you low-functioning psychopath. I know. But I can dream, right? You absolutely can dream, Darlene. You got to visualize it before it can happen. Oh, and speaking of people working in the Trump regime, an interesting story I saw last night. Over at the State Department, you know, where Mike Pompeo reigns supreme. He graduated first in his class at West Point, you'll recall.
God, that always tickles me.
Suck up. Chuck Park quit at the State Department. But he did so in resounding fashion. And he called out his fellow diplomats, saying, the complacent state sighs when the president blocks travel by Muslim immigrants, shakes its head when he defends Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, averts its gaze from images of children in detention camps. Then it complies with orders. And he cites chapter and verse. He says, every day we refuse visas based on administration priorities. We recite administration talking points on border security, immigration, and trade. We plan travel itineraries, book meetings, and literally hold doors open for the appointees who push Trump's toxic agenda around the world. What made Mr. Park finally break, quit his job in the State Department? It won't come as a surprise. In his editorial, he said, "My son, born in El Paso on the American side of that same Rio Grande, where the bodies of Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez and his daughter were discovered, in the same city where 22 people were just killed by a gunman whose purported manifesto echoed the inflammatory language of our president, my son turned 7 this month. I can no longer justify to him or to myself my complicity in the actions of this administration. That's why I chose to resign." We live in a time when simple acts of morality are monumental acts of heroism. I sure hope Mr. Park lands on his feet. Don't know if he's a Republican or a Democrat. Don't much care. In fact, I'd kind of like it better if he was a Republican in a way, because it serves as a guide star. Because he realized he had become complicit. He doesn't hide from it. He describes it as my complicity in the actions of this administration. And he declared he would no longer be complicit. There's a day coming when those who remained complicit and those who collaborated must have their day in the sanitizing light of the sun. In the aftermath of World War II, the French shaved the heads and marched the Vichy collaborators through the town square before they allowed them to pick up and continue to live alongside them in their society and their culture. There must be a reckoning. The problem, though, as we have seen from the last 400 years, is that we, the people of the United States, working on that more perfect union, have proven ourselves not particularly good at reckoning. That's not the only exit from the Trump administration, though. As of today, according to the New York Times, and, you know, Maggie Haberman, Sue Gordon has quit. Now, this is rather serious, because we have a statute, a federal statute, that says when there is a vacancy in the office of the Director of National Intelligence, when the DNI head quits, then the next in line is the deputy director. No ifs, ands, or buts, no weasel words, not only if the president isn't a syphilitic, septuagenarian, Adderall-addicted moron. No, it says the deputy director shall act as the director. That was Sue Gordon. Well, she bailed out today. Well, we don't know. We don't know if she pushed or we don't know if she was pushed or if she jumped. What we have is a tweet. The Deputy Director of National Intelligence, Sue Gordon, will leave her position following a meeting in the Oval Office with Trump today. And then Nitwit Nero got his thumbs on his phone again.
Sue Gordon is a great professional with a long and distinguished career. I've gotten to know Sue over the past 2 years and have developed great respect for her. Sue has announced she will be leaving on August 15th, which coincides with the retirement of Dan Coats. A new acting director of national intelligence will be named shortly.
See, she should have just become the acting director. But Julius Geezer, because he considers himself a law unto himself, well, he nominated that John Ratcliffe guy, who it turned out was just another lying maggot. But this works out even better, because this means that both the head and the second in command of DNI are gone, and that agency has been kneecapped. Yeah. And kneecapping the DNI is a good thing for Nitwit Nero. Kyle with a note. So we've reached the point of actually rounding up adults in front of kids. America is a Nazi state. And I don't say that lightly. I don't think any of us do. I mean, when the guy who came up with Godwin's Law said Godwin's Law no longer applies, that carried some weight. We're getting to the point of never coming back, not for 50 years or more from this. And no one seems to care. Have we all, and I mean all as the general population that aren't fascists and fascist sympathizers and collaborators, accepted this as our fate, or are we too numb to do anything? Those words by the guy who resigned at the State Department are nice, but only when it may have an effect on his family did he finally say enough with the racist, xenophobic vileness coming from the fascist regime. Did he have enough? He was perfectly okay treating immigrants and brown people from other countries and Muslims like shit. But only when his son may find out does he care. He should cut the bullshit because he's already sold his soul. Assuming he ever had one. There's no doubt it's a creepy time in America. A maggot, who also is a big fan of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, made El Paso nervous all over again. I guess that would be Metna. Make El Paso nervous again. A 21-year-old suspicious subject, fill in the blank, white male, was detained and interviewed before being released. He was hanging out, one might say stalking, a migrant community center in El Paso. When the local constabulary came to speak to him, they found him in possession of a gun and a knife outside the Casa Carmelita shelter. Casa Carmelita wrote in a Facebook post, "He was sitting in his truck wearing blue latex gloves and brandishing a knife. Police recovered a loaded gun, ammo, and a bag of white powder from his person." Yeah, he went there with his pick-em-up truck. Had a big Ted Cruz sign in the back. And a skin on the tailgate of Donald Trump's head on what appears to be Sylvester Stallone's body. the fact that he was caught and released didn't sit too well with the folks who do their best to provide services to immigrants in need of help. They wrote, police stated that the gunman has rights, that they cannot search his truck, and that they have no cause to arrest him. An eyewitness saw him brandishing a gun and attempting to enter our building. Women were fleeing down the street, warning neighbors as they ran away. We watched officers removing clips of ammo from his person. Meanwhile, some maggot or some supporter of the National Ruble Association has said, God damn it, it's not a clip, it's a magazine. Fuck. Liberals want to take away our guns and don't even know how to talk about guns. One officer acknowledged that if they had not arrived when they did, Thomas was likely to have committed acts which would be a different situation. They released him shortly after, on our block. The number one demographic of mass shooters are young white males. Well, you know what? Okay, so he's got rights. So do the police. The guy's sitting in a trumped up, cruised up truck with a knife, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't a butter knife. He's brandishing that. He's tried to get into the building. He's got a loaded gun and multiple magazines. And the cops say they can't search his truck. Bullshit. Because anybody who's ever had any sort of instruction on police stops has probably been told that if the policeman says, you mind if I search your vehicle, boy? Your answer is, do you have a warrant? And when the cop says no, you say then, no, you cannot search my vehicle. But the police always have the absolute right to say, well, that's all right. You just stay right here and we'll make sure you stay right here till I can get hold of the circuit judge and get a warrant. But the El Paso PD weren't that worried about a guy with a Trump skin on his tailgate and a Ted Cruz sign in his truck who had a gun and multiple magazines, happy maggots, and what was probably a hunting skinning knife. Who knows? Maybe he wanted to make a Mexican suit. I wouldn't be upset if I was Casa Carmelita. I would be incensed. But at least the El Paso PD, in making him get out of his truck, they did draw down on him. And they had him at point-blank range. At least they didn't take him to Burger King. Steve in New York says, you know when this will end? This will end when there's a natural disaster and we as a nation can't handle it and need outside help. The rest of the world will make sure it sends us shiploads full of thoughts and prayers, and the maggots, etc., realize that, no, we can't do it on our own. Oh, Steve. We've been there before. Remember when Hugo Chavez sent aid? Cut the price in oil, his country's oil, and now we've enacted a full-on embargo against Venezuela. Yeah. Subject line, I just discovered voice-to-text emailing. Anyway, real quick, from earlier you mentioned the Malcolm X quote, the chickens have come home to roost. That's the whole thing about white supremacy. No minority wants to bother them. Like I said in yesterday's email, it was white people who sent their jobs to Mexico and overseas, rich white guys who run large corporations. Why do they insist on wanting to take it out on people who are only doing work, incidentally, work they don't want to do? It isn't a matter of wanting to kill whitey or anything like that. It's just that minorities want to be left alone to live their lives and enjoy the freedoms that most Americans do. This will come back to haunt people. It's sad to say, but it's true. In a sense, they brought it on themselves. They couldn't let sleeping bears lie. So there may be consequences. I'm not advocating for anything. I'm just saying that this could happen. But I'm sure the extremists will have made it so bad that the government will have confiscated all the guns by then. Then who'll be screwed? Then, of course, that's Lady B. And that, of course, is central to their argument. I don't want the jackbooted government putting their jackbooted jackboots down on my freedom-loving neck right next to the tattoo that says only God can judge me. Because, and I think the normal among us-ish of whatever complexion or demographic, we recognize that that's just plain old paranoia. I saw a picture today of a guy in a coffee shop. It didn't say where. It was on my Twitter feed. It didn't say where, but it was of a pasty, doughy, white dude with an AR-15 slung over his back, barrel pointed downward. And he's standing in line at a coffee shop. And it's not a coffee shop in Haiti, or Somalia, or Iraq. It's a coffee shop somewhere in America. Apparently in some blighted suburban shithole where when pasty, doughy white dudes want to go for coffee, they have to strap on a weapon of war. What a monumental fuckwit. I walk in, I see that, I walk out. But in a lot of places in America, you walk out and you walk in another store and there's another pasty, doughy, paranoid, scared dude. I don't know, maybe he'd come for coffee and he was getting ready to go back home and go after the feral hogs, the 30 to 50 feral hogs that show up in his yard in 5 minutes. How do you communicate to people? See, okay, anthropology moment. These guns aren't just guns. In the discipline of archaeology, words like fetish and totem have a sort of specialized term of art meaning sort of unique to the discipline. Out here in the wide, wide world, we hear the word fetish, and we think about some dude on a couch sitting next to somebody going, "You have lovely feet." But a fetish object, anthropologically, is not quite the same thing. And in America, walking around with an AR-15 with enough bullets in it to kill everybody in a coffee shop and the three store surrounding area, it's not just a gun. Yes, Sigmund Freud once famously said, "Sometimes a cigar is only a cigar," but a gun is not only a gun in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century in the United States of America, by God, amen. It is a fetish object. It carries totemic implications. It is a statement of who you think you are and what you think your place is in culture and society. And what those definitions are vary somewhat. But if you've gotten to the point where you're strapping on an AR-15 to go get a cup of coffee, odds are you think you have a real handle on the nature of freedom in Merca. Because, see, odds are you don't have the freedom to tell your boss to go piss up a rope and suck on the wet end. You don't have the freedom to miss a car payment. You don't have the freedom to miss an insurance payment. Your house isn't paid for. You can't lay out from work. But a group of cynical millionaires and billionaires have told you, and they've told you so often and for so long, that you simply take it as gospel, that if you have a gun, you're fucking free. Now, the sane among us, we recognize that what that fucker's free to do is go and take out a Walmart, or a movie theater, or a school full of first graders. That's all that gun's good for. That's all the freedom it conveys. Because if, in fact, the jackbooted government thugs put their jackbooted jackboots down on his freedom-loving neck next to his tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me," well, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to take his fetish object away from him. And then, who will he be? And this is the thing that they know deep down inside. They will be ciphers. Nothings. Not even a cog in a wheel. They might be a statistic. They walk around shiny with privilege that they don't acknowledge even exists. And some of them, because of the nature of that whole lawful gun owner, awful gun owner dichotomy, well, some of them do exactly what I mentioned earlier. I remember the story out of Colorado Springs. I didn't know Lady B at the time, but I remember talking with our buddy Kevin there about it. A dude literally went walking down the middle of the street with an assault rifle strapped to his back and, sort of like mother calling the police in Allen, Texas, a number of people called the local constabulary and said, "Listen, there's a guy walking down the middle of a street with an assault rifle on his back." And the police responded, "Well, God bless America, that's his God-given Second Amendment right." And the police ain't going to have none of it if you say, "Listen, bub, I know what the Second Amendment says. It says well-regulated militia, and I'm looking at this fucker, and there is no way he's part of a well-regulated militia." This dude couldn't run a 100-yard dash without having an embolism. He'd infarct on a 50-yarder. He'd probably collapse on a 10-yard dash. He's sweating while he's walking. "Well, that's just great. But it's still his God-given right as a white man in America." A little bit later, the guy killed two or three people. But as the police had made abundantly clear, up until the moment he pulled the trigger, he was just another lawful gun owner. And there's another picture. This one from Rusty. Cheyenne, Wyoming Starbucks. Guy with a banana magazine, an extended capacity magazine, and a semi-automatic assault rifle slung over his shoulder like he's Jeremiah Johnson for the 21st century. Got him an ugly print shirt and a goddamn tactical vest and a cowboy hat and some jeans. And he's just, he's ready for the ISIS MS-13 Antifa. But hell, that doesn't need to be Cheyenne, Wyoming. I mean, you know where, West, goddamn, how many times have I talked about the chicken shits who go into Walmart who have to strap a hog leg on to get a loaf of bread and a jug of milk? As to the Allen, Texas Police Department, Randy in PA says, you know how that police department looked when that guy actually went off? Kind of like fools. Incompetent fools. Nope. I mean, the Allen Police Department, when they got busted for it, they said, well, there wasn't nothing we could do. His mama didn't say he was behaving erratically or nothing. She's just a little worried because she said he didn't know how to use the fucking gun. Well, I guess he knew how to use the fucking gun now, didn't he? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we're halfway through the program. I miss hearing from you guys. We had 540 to go this evening. We are, I don't know, wait a minute, let me check. Sometimes I don't get the notifications. Let's see. Nope, we're still at zero. Just checking. As far as fundraising goes for the evening in this brutal month. Flavio with a note. White man in America. If a black guy went in a coffee shop like that, the police would be there in 5 minutes and he'd be dead. Well, hell, we already know. Two black guys went into a Starbucks and got the cops called on them for wanting to use the restroom. What was that line that John Edwards used back before he ran into his little philandering problem? There are two Americas. Pretty sure there's more than two. Three or four, maybe. White America. White, straight America. White, straight Christian America. And then there's Black America and Hispanic America. Gay America, LGBTQ America. Yeah. Normal America and maggot America. Right. But maybe if we allow some puny little infant-sized amount of hope to grow in us, maybe there is. It's August recess, and the Congress critters are home for a spell. And representing Chris Stewart, who is, of course, a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, had him a town hall out where he figured it was nice and safe.
Chris Stewart, is from Utah. And according to a report in the Salt Lake Tribune, shit went sideways in a straight-up hurry. Now, I don't think anybody's going to say that Chris Stewart's constituency out there in Utah is comprised of wild-eyed, radical ISIS MS-13 Antifa liberals. I mean, these are your good, solid, rock, salt-of-the-earth, rock-ribbed Republican Mormons. He had his town hall last night, and according to the Salt Lake Tribune, it, and this is a quote, quickly turned wild. Because the first question was about how the government can keep people safe from the ongoing nightmare of our gun-wild society. And from there, it only got worse, turning into a shouting match about whether or not Trump instigated, incited, inspired the El Paso massacre. With forays into Hoot Allen about the Second Amendment. And eventually, the Republican member of Congress said, well, I'll just walk out unless y'all can be more civil. This all took place in North Salt Lake City City Hall. It didn't really calm down. And the people in the room, even after the meeting was over, kept on yelling at each other. And some people tried to hug the folks who were crying and upset. He answered the first question and he said, well, everybody should condemn violence and racism. That's when Jamie Carter of West Bountiful spoke up and said, then why did you vote not to condemn racism? You see, Chris Stewart voted against the resolution condemning Trump's racist remarks. And, of course, then Chris Stewart got butthurt and said, by your question, you're implying I'm a racist. Other constituents yelled, she did not. Well, why would I support a racist if I wasn't? Asked Chris Stewart, who was apparently never on his college or high school debate team and isn't real good at that logic and common sense thingy. So finally, trying to find some middle ground, he said, could we all agree that racism is wrong and should be condemned? Could we all agree that violence, regardless of the reason, should always be condemned? He asked, completely forgetting about the history known as the Mountain Meadows Massacre. And then somebody hollered back that, well, yeah, and the president needs to be first in line for that, agreeing that violence, regardless of the reason, should always be condemned, and that racism is wrong and should be condemned. I mean, yeah, that needs to start with the president. At which point, Chris Stewart demonstrated his lack of understanding of the first law of Holes, declaring, the president of the United States, as far as I know, hasn't shot anybody. And standing down there in the bottom of the hole that he wanted to keep on digging, somebody threw a spadeful in and said, Charles Manson never shot anybody either. Because, see, Chris Stewart has a problem. You might call it Lindsey Graham disease. Once upon a time, Lindsey Graham called Donald Trump a bigot and a racist. And now, when Donald Trump yawns, you can Precious Lindsey's so far up his fundament that you can see Lindsey grinning in the back of Trump's throat. And Chris Stewart, once upon a time, referred to Trump as our Mussolini. But then he said, no, I was just joshing. And now he's one of the biggest maggots in the Congress. Note to the good, upstanding, God-fearing, rock-ribbed Mormons of North Salt Lake City. If you don't want someone who defends Donald Trump representing you and spending more time defending Donald Trump than he does representing you, may I commend to you that you vote for a Democrat in November 2020 in your congressional race and let Chris Stewart go off to wherever it is he thinks he needs to be. That's the easy solution. But again, we're back to that discussion of fetish items and totemic images, because those folks there in Salt Lake City, the minute they think about voting for a Democrat, will immediately have their minds filled with little pictures of precious little fetuses. And they'll feel like they're personally baby slaughtering if they vote for a Democrat. Lisa Baskin is a member of the North Salt Lake City Council. She said, would you support a proposal to change the Second Amendment to make clear it pertains only to state militia and not individuals? It was clearly intended to allow every citizen the right to arm bears. And about half the crowd jumped up and started hallelujah and speaking in tongues and marrying people and whatever they do out there. It was intended to allow everyone to own a gun if they were a member of a well-regulated militia. But that's kind of lost on Chris Stevens. One cannot be certain, but one wonders how many thousands and thousands of dollars he's cashed in checks from the National Ruble Association. And then he tried one of the biggest whoppers of the evening. You know what? People carrying guns stop mass shootings more often than they realize. Well, if it can't be realized, it can't be known. And if it can't be known, it's not true. And if it's not true, it's either a lie or just some bizarre fantasy. I mean, that's kind of how that whole logic thing works. But throwing a sop to the crowd, he said, you know, I do support laws that would take away guns from people with mental illness, and we can give money to improve school safety. And then this whopper. One woman at the meeting began to cry. She said she was afraid that Trump is leading us down a path similar to what Hitler did in Germany. She said this scared her because she's Jewish. A man in the crowd yelled, well, Trump has Jewish ancestors. Hint, no, he fucking well doesn't. Not even. He has a nice, pure Aryan heritage. There's no Jewishness in Mary McLeod's little puddle of a gene pool. And call me crazy, but I don't think there are a lot of German Jews whose last names were Christ! Because that's the line, that's one of the family, yeah. It's just one disaster after another, isn't it? Years ago, says Ron in Raleigh, in the 70s, when I first moved to Raleigh, I lived in an apartment above a merchant marine. Whenever he came ashore, he would strap on his 45 ACP with a tied-down holster. I guess being on land caused him no small amount of concern. I never have understood open carry. Oddly, it seems to always be white guys. Well, that's because the black guys who open carry wind up all dead. Because Merca. You have to have your special white privilege glasses on to see the word white in front of Amendment 2 in the original Constitution. Good question, Bob, says Flavio. I genuinely wonder how large corporations in red states, Texas for example, get people to move there knowing they'll likely see AK-47s at the grocery store, wrote author Eric Bollert. I'm guessing that's not part of the relocation information sheet, Flavio. And you know, of course, that Nitwit Nero threw a fit on the mayor of Dayton, Nan Wally. She and Sherrod Brown, as Flush Limbaugh described him years ago, they pressed him on the need for legislation passed by the House to be considered and passed in the Senate and for him to sign it into law. Because remember, those bills are sitting in a pool of blood on Moscow Mitch's desk. And so interviewed by CNN about the exchange, when she described him, urging him to tell the Senate that he wanted the bills passed, she said, well, he was kind of intimating that President Obama didn't get the assault weapon ban passed. He said,
why didn't Obama get this done?
And Sherrod Brown said he didn't have the votes, that's why. But Mayor Wally said, I replied, but you know, Governor DeWine voted for the assault weapon ban when he was a senator. And I said, but you know, maybe you can get the votes, Mr. President. You can do something that Obama couldn't do. How about you get the votes for the assault weapon ban? CNN asked, do you think he was listening? She said, he heard us. I don't know if he listens. Oh, I think, and then he came out and said,
no, there's no political will for an assault weapons ban.
No political will is another way of saying,
I'm scared as fuck of my maggots.
Albert says, Bob, in Texas, they're the guys who hunt wild hogs. They do it from elevated shooting blinds. Plus, they use magnum pistols for one reason. They have to kill the pig with their first shot. If you only wound the pig, it'll start squealing. Those squeals will attract every wild pig within 500 yards. If you're on the ground, the pigs will tear you apart. Oh, it's that scene from Galaxy Quest. Aren't they cute? Have you never watched the program? Steve in New York says, Charles Manson never shot anybody either. I need a ruling
Let's assume the person who said that comment was not a member of the Horn congregation. If so, can they still be eligible to receive a cowbell? The person surely deserves one. If not, I nominate that person for an honorary cowbell. Cowbell awarded. Neither did Charles Manson. That's perfect. It really is. Ah, the origins of the photo of the pasty, doughy dude at the coffee shop. Charlie Sykes tweeted it, and that's where I saw it. Journalists, politicians, and internet celebrities responded to the picture showing a man appearing to patiently wait in line at Starbucks coffee shop with the loaded firearm strapped to his back. Author and the Bulwark founder, Charlie Sykes, posted the question to Twitter next to the jarring photograph. Serious question. You walk into a business and see this. Do you, one, leave, two, feel safer, three, don't care? The picture of the armed Starbucks patron dates back to 2013 when open carry activists challenged then-CEO Howard Schultz after he penned a respectful request that gun owners stop bringing loaded weapons into Starbucks stores. A vast majority of the top responses to Sykes ridiculed the man, and he was identified as C.J. Grisham of Open Carry, Texas. It was the actions of Grisham and similar pro-gun activists in 2013 that forced Starbucks to back away from their firearm neutrality and pushed Schultz to request patrons no longer bring guns inside their stores. Can you imagine being such a craven little billionaire that you'd let yourself be pushed around by a pasty-faced, doughy white dude with paranoid fantasies about saving the day with his shoot 'em up gun? How much money was he afraid to lose? Was he afraid of a shareholder suit? Jesus. Hey, thank you to Colin. And thank you to Will in Chicago, and thanks to Mike in Cascadia. We just got ourselves back down below the $500 level. What is that? And so that's 400 and 75 bucks to go. Get even for this evening. Lady B says, why don't you see more armed black men walking around Starbucks? They have the same rights too. Child, I laughed my ass off after I typed that. If you don't know why that's funny, you're not paying attention, or you're, you know, clueless. I think it was asked. I'm presuming, you know, my operating philosophy with the Horn Family Community Congregation is to presume good faith. And so I presume that that question was asked rhetorically. Well, here at the close of the second hour of the program, we have a $25 challenge courtesy of Steve in New York. So we've got a chance to get it down to $425 if anyone responds to Steve's challenge. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Now, I don't know if this is going to work. Let's try. Are you there, Todd?
I'm here. Are you there?
Hell's bells. I can take calls on the Skype line. Praise be. That's just that makes sense. It's just the sound card. I just can't play audio. Yeah. Cool.
Oh, clue me in. I'm missing a piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, I got sound card problems on the production machine. It can't see it right now. The fab machine has gone all Helen Keller relative to the sound card. Are you there? Oh, hold on. There's that problem. Okay, go ahead.
Wow. Okay. At work one time we had sound card issues on our computer. IT people, they were playing with me. You know, sometimes it takes them maybe 20 seconds to fix something, and they fuck with you. It might be a day. And I've heard this fucker's laughing. They know how to keep their jobs. But you know what I'm talking about, right?
That sounds like something out of T.S. Eliot. I've heard the fuckers laughing each to each.
I'm serious. Well,
is that from the love song of J. Alfred Fuck Off?
Oh God, I'm serious. It triggered something when you said sound card because that messed up my work for a couple of weeks. I was slowed down with that. But my connection. I think that AT&T must be subcontracting with your provider because my connection's in and out. I don't know what's going on with that. So I'm curious. I don't hear anything. Does anybody? I need to know. It's killing me. Does anyone know? Maybe you covered it already. Why don't they march out the owners and the manager, the hiring people, the HR folks?
Well, because they're the ones who dropped the dime.
Oh. Okay.
This is retaliation for costing the company $3.75 million in a NLRB lawsuit.
All right. Okay, I'm missing something. I'm missing something here. Why would people who work for the company drop a dime on the company?
Because it was a sexual harassment wonderland. And a racial discrimination and ethnic discrimination paradise.
Oh.
And they complained. The NLRB sued. No, it was the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, sued.
Mm-hmm.
And Koch Foods lost. And then, bang, a year later, here comes the Ice Boys. The same tactic has been done up in Ohio. Because, see, those people got money out of the billionaire.
Okay, that makes sense. But even still, for my taste, I'm not hearing enough. I don't think that the public hears enough about the owners.
No. But, of course, remember, whether it's a pipeline or a mountaintop removal job, or a frack pad, or a chicken plant, the billionaire never lives anywhere near the nastiness he's engaged in. So ICE would have had to show up, and ICE only has jurisdiction over immigration and customs enforcement. That's what ICE stands for. You'd have to have an FBI type, maybe, go up and arrest the billionaire who owns Koch Foods.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what should happen. I mean, why not? They're attacking higher education now.
Well, the thing is, it's looking like maybe very few, if any, of the people who got rounded up and rousted were here illegally. This was retribution. This was targeted and orchestrated punishment.
Mm-hmm. So that's what that little blurb I saw on the Hill a few minutes ago, that's what they meant. Only 300 out of the, like less than half or around half, only half of the people were really eligible to be harassed.
And we don't even know that.
Yeah, it's too soon. This is really getting behind the pale now. There is no end to this. I don't see it.
Well, I mean, there's an end. We can create an end. And if we really, really are willing to work for it, Todd, it can end with just a delicious, delicious double helping of justice when at shortly after 1 p.m. on January the 20th, 2021, we get a new Democratic president. And the next thing that happens is that somebody slaps the fucking bracelets on Donald Trump and frog marches his ass away from the White House. But that's only if we are willing to be single-minded about it, put aside our yearnings for political purity, and focus on one thing, beating his orange ass. And beating his orange ass red.
I hope that happens. I sincerely hope that happens. Because I don't see how we survive much longer. I don't even see how we go another 3 months with this nonsense going on. If this is not even America anymore, I don't know what we are. We're the shithole countries that he describes. That's what we are now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, hey, speaking of living near, you know, when you were going to the airport back and forth in Philly, I don't know if you noticed the massive oil refinery.
Quite, yes.
Okay. Well, imagine what that was like in the 70s. And the odor, and the, I mean, it was a haze, a constant haze of the whole area. And that little neighborhood there is called the Devil's Pocket, Gray's Ferry. People live really near there. And guess what? Those folks who grew up around there, they're all a little crazy. They're very violent. And, you know, a lot of new research is showing it's because of lead poisoning and all those chemicals that you're exposed to. But I just thought about that when you were saying they don't live anywhere near it. No, they don't. You know, they don't have to suffer that environmental.
No, that's the nature of the resource curse. You never live near the place that you've cursed.
Yeah. That's something. And, you know, I know I call a lot and all that, but you know, and
don't
what
apologize.
Happened last week? Well, I'm going to make room for some other folk, but I like talking with you. You know, you always have something interesting to talk about.
We have great conversations.
I'm living in an intellectual, yes, absolutely, I agree. In the 70s, man, those oil refineries. So guess what? Like just before you got there, probably a week or two, there was a massive explosion there. No, because I read that local paper every day. It was massive. It was like an earthquake, according to the residents that were near there. And so all kinds of toxins got released. And it's so funny. It's funny, strange. It's right up on that.
A week ago, the refinery in Houston caught fire. And then last week, the pipeline blew up in Lincoln County, Kentucky.
Yep.
I mean, the science, physics, engineering, the earth itself is giving us every sign in the world we need to get away from hydrocarbons. We're like, what?
What's it going to take?
I honestly don't know. I mean, there's a chance that whatever it does take, we're not going to do. Because capitalism, because shareholders.
You know, Mother Earth is trying to cleanse itself, and I think that's part of what's going on with global warming. You know, if everything's covered with water, we won't be able to do too much. You know, we're the scourge. Human beings are scourge.
You know, I hear people say that. I don't agree. Because Mother Earth isn't trying to get rid of the indigenous hunter-gatherer bands, the few of them that still exist in Amazonia, that would be Jair Bolsonaro doing that.
Well, you got a point there. Okay, that's fair enough. You got a point there. All right. Well, you know, we can't keep going on like that. This is too much. And you know, and that what now we have 10 years left. Maybe 10 years is nothing.
No,
nothing. But hey, have you had any good sourdough bread lately?
No, but I am waiting for the sourdough starter to get finished, and it's getting real funky.
Well, that's good. That's good news.
The original plan was that last weekend and then this weekend would be sourdough pancake weekend. I don't know if that's going to happen because, well, everything that's been going on for the last week.
Yeah, that you know, that's another reason I called. It broke my heart to hear your household story. That's really sad. You know, I just want to, I mean, I don't know. I'm speechless, really. You know, life is treacherous sometimes. Things, bad things happen. Good things happen. You know, things will get better. Don't worry, things will get better.
It's climb or die.
No.
You know, you're far enough up the rock face that there's no climbing back down. If you've ever climbed on rocks, you know that you can only climb on the things that are above you. You cannot find the shit that's below you.
It's tough.
Oh, hey, by the way, some breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Springfield, Missouri. Springfield Police Department says they responded to a call of an active shooter at the Walmart Neighborhood Market in Republic Road near Golden Avenue in Springfield. They arrived on scene within 3 minutes. This is, Haley just sent this to me. They arrived on scene within 3 minutes of the call. A young white male appearing to be in his 20s pulled up to the Walmart where he donned body armor and military fatigues. He was carrying tactical weapons. Then he walked into the Walmart, grabbed a cart, and began pushing it around the store. He recorded himself walking through the store with his phone. The store manager pulled a fire alarm, sent people fleeing from the store, and the guy then went to an emergency exit, the guy with the tactical weaponry and the vest and the, yeah, and a firefighter was waiting for him and held him at gunpoint.
Whoa. So, okay, there's a whole lot of questions I have after that.
Lieutenant Mike Lucas said it was clear the man's intent was to cause chaos, saying in part, his intent was not to cause peace or comfort. He's lucky he's alive, to be honest. Well, only if lucky is transferable to the word white.
Ain't that the truth? I'm a little bit pissed the fuck off about that. I mean, you know where I'm going with that. I'm sorry. Did you finish the story?
No. I mean, there's other details, but
no. Go ahead.
They won't. The police won't confirm the nature of statements that the young man made to the people inside Walmart. That must mean he was not walking around saying "Have a nice day."
Mm-hmm.
This will be bruited, of course, as proof that a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun.
Well, that's not true.
When, in fact, it was the Walmart manager who pulled the fire alarm who stopped the bad guy with a gun. Only a good guy with a fire alarm can stop a bad guy. Jesus.
So now we have to have two different sets of alert mechanisms in these stores, right? A fire alarm and an active shooter alarm.
Well, in this case, it was just the fire alarm, and everybody got the hell out. Attention, Walmart shoppers!
But you know, going back to the ethnicity, it's just interesting and strange that so many of these obviously guilty people, where there's no question that, you know, who did what. When they're white, they walk away many times. Most times. Now, if a black person even thinks about touching a firearm in public.
Dude was murdered for holding a BB gun. Murdered by the cops. Then there's Tamir Rice, 12 years old, who looked to the police officer like a full-grown Negro gang member thug.
Right. Right. Well, that's what often happens. You know, society often ascribes adult behaviors and mannerisms to black children because they're seen as a threat. I mean, there's empirical evidence to back that up. There's a lot of studies out.
No, it's not. It's not like the science hasn't been done.
Well,
because it has.
It has. What are
people pretty damn clear.
You know, and you can't even protect yourself. Like, you know, like I told you before, when I went for a concealed carry permit, you know, at the end of the day, it's a whole day class. And the constable pulls me to the side and goes, you know, you really might want to think about that. It ain't a good idea for you to have that when I'm walking around. You know how it is. I said, no, I don't. What do you mean I know how it is? What are you talking about? Well, you just might not want to do that.
Might make people uncomfortable.
You don't want to scare nobody, do you, son? You know, fuck that. And so, you know, I didn't know how to feel. I don't even know. All kinds of things were going through my mind when he said that. You know, and then 2 years to whatever, I mean, X amount of years later, you have Philando Castile. I think his name was. I know it's Philando.
Yeah, Philando Castile.
You know, everything by the book, and of course, he just gets blown away. You know, it's very disturbing. I don't know what the hell do the people expect. You know, how much patience do we have to have? What are we supposed to do?
You know, coming from the background I come from, Todd. The answer is pass laws. It's like I've said before, if you look in the Old Testament, you know, there's a proscription on goat fucking. Well, God didn't give the children of Israel a law against fucking goats in case anybody would ever get the urge. You only pass laws to stop things that are already happening. There was a goat fucking problem. So God said, stop fucking the goats. You don't say don't steal if people aren't already stealing. You don't say thou shalt not kill if people aren't already killing. And I mentioned the Decalogue simply because so many maggots fetishize it. Tonight's word, the password, is fetish.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize it hurts the tender, dainty feelings of pasty, doughy old white men to not be able to walk around with their blue steel Viagra strapped to their backs. But if we're going to live in a society that we like to consider civilized, their needs are going to have to come behind the need of 5-year-olds to keep having parents. And yet, if you confront one of these gun humpers, they'll tell you straight out that their rights to a gun are greater than a right of a 5-year-old to have parents whose lives were taken by a guy with a right to a gun.
Oh, they believe that. There's something, I don't know what is going on.
They're sick fuckers, Todd.
Yeah. But, I'd like to see some of these people's brains dissected and studied, and, you know, like their limbic system, you know, the emotional area, and maybe the prefrontal cortex, because they think differently. That, right, there is a body of research out there that shows, though, how conservative, quote-unquote, whatever that means, but that category of folk, they, you know, you already know this, they operate from fear. You know, maybe their amygdala is enhanced somehow, you know, their lizard brain. But, you know, this just can't continue. Well, we all cannot coexist. It's like if it's not what they want, then it's wrong. They don't understand compromise.
Did you ever wonder? And again, you know, El Paso Walmart was targeted.
Mm-hmm.
I think a majority of the victims in Dayton were female.
Why is it that you never hear about a young white male going and, oh, I don't know, I don't even want to whisper it into the ear of the universe. Why is it you never hear about a young white male shooting up a NASCAR race?
Because it's what they like.
Because they know where their own congregate. That's what I'm trying to get across here. These are targeted attacks.
Right. So how is it I hear chatter that it's not, they're not going to charge the Walmart shooter with hate crimes and terrorism. If you want to cure a disease, a dis-ease, the first thing you have to do is identify it.
Yes.
That's the very first thing. Okay. So you get it identified. Then you can figure out what is the proper remedy. But when people can't even utter the words white supremacy as if it doesn't exist or as if it's not a problem. And see, I'm going back to Washington Journal in the past few days, right? There have been some callers, one female from, I'm not going to say what state she was from because I can't pinpoint it, but an older, audibly, she seemed like she was Caucasian. All right. I'm like 98% sure. So she said, well, there is no such thing as white supremacy. You're making all these things up.
Well, we sorted that out with the Tucker Carlson clip, Tracy and me last night.
I had to finish listening to that. The program stopped an hour and 30 minutes. I didn't get a chance to finish it because you guys are really talking her, when she was talking about her in-law. Well, I shouldn't say that, but yeah, that was good. See, that this is real life though. That's a true dilemma. You know, that's real. That's what gives texture to your program. This is why this is such a good program and people should donate. Because it doesn't get any more.
Well, there is a $25 challenge on the table. Thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's and I'm glad that someone donated some new headphones for you and some new headgear. Or that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Put it like that. But we, you know, and what I'm trying to get at is that folks, you know, for a lot of different reasons, I suppose, are afraid it makes them. We're going to have to feel uncomfortable. Like our country right now, when a child grows, sometimes it hurts. Their bones hurt. Things happen. It's growing pains. We're a young country. We're still going through growing pains. But if we want to succeed as a country, we have to face facts. Okay, fact. You know, having that black guy in that White House, it really shook up a lot of people's value systems.
Because they're racists.
Right. And they hate to be called racist. And they don't even understand what racism is.
Too damn bad. If it walks like a duck and if it walks like a goose and it honks like a goose, if it steps like a goose, it's a Nazi.
All right.
What's his name? Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, a week ago barely sat in front of the Senate and said more than half of all the domestic terrorism that takes place in this country comes from what you could call white supremacy.
Exactly. And we should all be calling our representatives and senators to let them know that we understand that funding has been taken away from programs that would at least try to ameliorate some of these things. But that's not the focus. The focus is the other way. If you listen to that nasty, disgusting person who's the attorney general, he made it very clear. Well, and the redneck before him, Sessions, he said, oh, no, we have to look at Black Lives Matter, Antifa. I mean, Antifa, anti-fascist. So why are you, in other words, you want to be fascist. They're a threat to us, our power structure. This is what concerns me. This is why all those fuckers have to go. And I demand that Bill Barr be impeached right now. Before I get off the phone, I want his ass impeached. Fuck him.
With a white, white, hot poker. Yes.
I mean, seriously. He's all these people perjured themselves, but he is the worst. Because he has a history. And fuck being polite. You know, we saw what he did. We saw what he did with Oliver North and that crew. Good God. This is ridiculous. You know, it's just too much, man. These folks are fucking crazy. And the more that we just let this go on, now I think we need another march on Washington. And, a lot of folks, I say about 3 or 4 degrees of separation.
We've needed one of those for 20 years, Todd. And from time to time, you know, a few thousand people will show up on Thursday. They took a long weekend from work. They'll go to their trainings in the Unitarian churches and whatnot on Friday. And then on Saturday, they'll go to the big protest. Half the time, the for-profit media doesn't even show up because, fuck, somebody's having a protest on the mall. And then they leave at the end of Saturday. They're back in their cars and on the way home on Sunday. And at most, the biggest mention you'll get is how much of a mess was left.
Well,
okay.
That is true.
It's stylized. It's not the same thing as what happened in the late 60s and the 70s when young people who were about to be thrown into a goddamn meat grinder and had skin and bones in the game showed up to say hell no.
An abattoir?
Or 1963 with Dr. King. It's not the same thing. The people. I'm not coming down. Okay. I'm not busting your chops.
No.
The people you want to show up. You know how I was talking about a few minutes ago about the pasty faced white dude has to have his gun totem with him because it's what makes him think he's free when he really isn't. Because he's got a mortgage and a car payment and insurance. Well, most of America is that way. In the early days of the early days of the labor struggle, labor responded like it often does in countries today. Not labor, but capital. They beat the hell out of people and murdered them. I mean, that's a reality of the history of Southern West Virginia and the mine wars. But they figured out after a while that people will gladly hold their hands out to have iron shackles placed around their wrists as long as the shackles are lined in velvet. And the velvet lining to the shackles are our home mortgages and our car payments. I guess I'm about to have one of those, and I'm really kind of dreading it.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
And insurance payments. And you got to buy groceries. And all of this is dependent on keeping your job, whatever it is, and you're probably hanging on to it with a sense of quiet desperation. And you can't go and spend 30 days living in a tent in D.C. demanding the restoration of the Republic because you will be ruined if you do. Because no matter how soft the velvet, the outside is still iron.
But that's a grim picture you're painting.
Well, tell me I'm wrong.
No, and that's why I'm very pleased at what I see is going on in Kentucky with the coal miners, demanding they get paid for the work they did. Have you talked about that already?
Well, yeah, I have, and I'm of two minds on that.
Oh.
I'm sorry that they chose to work in a dying industry. You know, I remember back in the 90s when Playboy interviewed Trump and he said, I like to think if I'd been born in Appalachia, I would have had more sense than to become a fucking coal miner. Goddamn people have no imagination, no ambition, no drive. He said that.
Yeah. I know he did.
And so, you know, but by the same token, they did an honest day's labor, because all work is honorable. They did an honest day's labor for an honest day's pay. And they've been fucked out of it. But they were so busy bolting their goddamn friends of coal fucking bumper license tags to their car and going to rallies to try to shout down the goddamn Enviro-Nazis, the tree huggers, that they never right. bothered to notice that they were gonna get fucked. They thought the company was their friend. Because there was the company. They'd put a precious little note in every paycheck that said, the Obama war on coal is coming after your job. And then it turned out that they got fucked out of their paychecks, not by that Kenyan muslin you slurper, but by the billionaire who owned the company and wanted to build a hotel resort that isn't needed in West Virginia. Oopsie, boys. Oopsie.
Bob, that's what you're saying is brilliant. Because you're touching on so many important things of this movement that we despise, that what's going on right now.
I mean, they had a high old time, Todd. I saw them time after time after time. They would get a pay, if we scheduled a rally to try to save a community that had a mountain that was about to be blown up over top of it, the company would give them a free paid day off and a free T-shirt to go and scream at the tree huggers.
And who knows how much of that was backed by the Russian trolls.
I don't think it was Russian trolls. Shit, no, it was Don Blankenship and Bob Murray and these assholes.
Well, I'm just saying, they could have jumped on top of that on the tail end, because they got their hands in everything online. You know, and they know how to tap into a movement. You know, just like, that's disgusting. Just like it was, you know, the Mueller report.
My wife got kidney punched by a coal wife who had her hands together with her fingers laced, and her hand and her fingers were covered in cheap Walmart jewelry, and she slipped up behind Agnes and kidney punched her with both hands laced together.
And, oh my God, man, you should see the look on my face right now.
And Agnes pissed blood.
Oh, fuck that.
Then there's the friend of Cole who showed up to Larry Gibson's 4th of July picnic.
No, wait, what happened to Agnes? That's terrible.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I know it didn't happen yesterday, but, I mean, that's, what the fuck?
And she got kidney problems to this day. And then there's
what you're saying is brilliant.
There's the
go ahead.
No, please.
Got me hyped up. Well, all I'm saying is that these folks, this whole thing is insidious, because they love Trump because he's racist, like the regular folks. And they don't even understand they're getting fucked, and the capitalists and the industrialists are laughing themselves to the bank.
Yeah, hit me again. I can put a little stank on it.
So do they not see that what these industrialists are trying to do and what they are doing? They're making wages the same no matter where you go in the world. The wages they're flattening wages everywhere. You see.
Well, what do you think those free trade agreements were about?
Exactly.
I mean, they were dirty pieces of work, working people, and God knows the unions crying from the rooftops. This is going to destroy American jobs, And people like Bill Clinton said, "No, it won't. It'll make it'll level the working playing field all over the world." And wagged that knuckle at us and said, "Them unions helped get me elected, but well, you know, who are they going to vote for? Bob fucking Dole? Fuck them."
Yeah. Oh God.
I mean, that's reality. He was just, you know, he had the same attitude toward, you know, global free trade as George H.W. Bush did. Yeah, well. But then the jobs left and went elsewhere. And suddenly, there wasn't, you know, a woman sitting at a sewing machine making socks in Bumpus, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Instead, it was a woman in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm. Or Vietnam.
But then, wait. Down there at the sock factory in Guatemala, they haven't lined the shackles with velvet yet. So
these people needed
enforcers to make sure that none of the workers down there at the new NAFTA factory got uppity. And guess who's making people flee by the tens of thousands from Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador now?
Who?
Want to bet some of them have risen through the hierarchy and they're old NAFTA knee breakers?
Oh, that's exactly what it is. You know, I gotta try to remember all these points. Okay. But back to what you were saying, with the wages, right? So Clinton got the Republicans, and that's what really pissed him off. You know, he was, you know, he had a way, he had that charm, and he was able to do it.
Well, he thought that would make him like him better, but it made him hate him, worse, and so they impeached him anyway.
Well. And the other thing that I mean, look, a lot of people just don't have the time to do the research, or they weren't paying attention when things happen, if you're of a certain age. But it's really bothersome and worrisome and just disgusting to hear news reports and not when folks don't deliver the backstory as to why this is. I mean, I can think of, I don't know how far back you can go, but there's a reason those people are fleeing, because we, the United States, got involved in their economies, because what we basically do is support capitalism throughout the world, and we back it up with our military. You know, like when Danny Ortega was running, coming to power. Now, you know, Oliver North and crew, you know, that's their whole unconscious thing. They, you know, they wanted to do whatever they wanted to do. Fuck what Congress says. You know, so when you make a disruption in other parts of the world and then it comes back to bite you in the ass, you know, don't be surprised. You can't blame those people. We're partly, I'm not going to say everything because that's too hyperbolic, but there's a reason. And I mean, my God, like, look, United Food Company, you know, that's that colonial.
Yeah, well, you know, when you get into United Fruit, you go back to Smedley Butler and War is a Racket. Remember, he got his first Medal of Honor for defending Nicaragua and United Fruit from Nicaraguans.
See, and that's why the Gutenberg Project is so important. Anyone can go, you can read that. You know, they have a lot of interesting books on that website.
But bear in mind, that legacy continued up into the near modern era. Because back when George W. Bush became appointed president, Eric Holder, who had built a career out of working in the Civil Rights Division, said, "Nope, I'm out," and immediately went to a silk stocking law firm in Washington, D.C., where he, collaborating with the Bush DOJ, literally let Chiquita executives in Colombia let their executives skate on literally murder for hire. They knew that people were being hired to murder labor organizers in their banana plantations in Colombia. And the Chiquita banana guys said, "Well, okay, how's that gonna affect the profit to loss ratio? Oh, it'll be good, boss. Okay, go ahead, wipe them out.
Go ahead."
And so Eric Holder represented those dudes and came up with a sweetheart deal whereby they weren't even prosecuted for accessories after the fact. They walked on murder. That's Eric Holder. Now, whatever else that was good that he did, that was not good. And it remains a stain on his more or less decent reputation.
I wonder if that hole in
when I see Eric Holder pontificating and holding forth about Trump, I'm sorry, this is on me, but I see a labor organizer in Colombia laying face down in the mud with a bullet through his brain.
Bullet hole.
And Eric Holder going, shit happens.
What, you know something, and what was the Commerce Secretary, Ron Brown. He died under suspicious circumstances because the hole in his head was much too round, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, I heard too much from Rush Limbaugh about that to ever give it any credence.
But the
other thing I was thinking about last night, because I know it probably sounds unhealthy, and it probably is, I'm pretty much doing show prep every waking minute. And Agnes does, too. Agnes is the research department for show prep. Half of the stuff I would never see if it weren't for Agnes. She's magic where that's concerned.
Well, you're fortunate. You have a wonderful wife.
And so last night, as we were getting ready to turn out the lights and I was going to read myself to sleep on some 1947 Raymond Chandler, my mind just happened to stumble backwards to the days when Limbaugh and Jerry Falwell and practically every Republican who was anybody was promulgating a dirty-ass documentary called The Clinton Body Count, in which, of course, Vince Foster, and of course, when I heard the Seth Rich paranoid conspiracy, that immediately made me remember the Vince Foster paranoid conspiracy and that weird fucker from Indiana, that Republican congressman who proved, goddammit, he proved that Hillary Clinton blew away Vince Foster because he went out in his backyard and shot some watermelons with a pistol.
Oh, God, they kept playing that over and over.
But the Clinton body count was sold to white wing rubes all over this country, and it was all the number of people who have this one of the same letters as Clinton in their name, and that person died in a traffic accident. It was disgusting. Eventually, I think Jerry Falwell even had to disavow it. It was bullshit. Vicious, slanderous, libelous bullshit. But here's the thing. There really is a Trump body count.
A Trump body count?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
We can, 22 people in El Paso.
I'm quite sure Agnes saw that story in the Hill. I mean, it was just posted a little while ago in Montana. Okay? You know the story?
Which?
Okay. Alley in Montana. And I'm attempting to
pull it up as I talk. And so a Trump supporter got into a little argument with a young man, a 13-year-old, at the rally who did not remove his hat during the Pledge of Allegiance. So they exchanged words, and then the perpetrator, the trumpeter, the maggot, he grabbed the 13-year-old by the throat and slammed him to the ground and gave him a concussion and some other injuries. And it turns out, and he said, well, Trump told me to do it. You know, he said, well, I was inspired by Donald Trump. And, you know, he thought he could get away with it. So, like, in other words, we know there's a correlation, but that's a direct cause and effect, you know, by his own mouth, you know, by his own words.
Well, part of the reason, and I first saw this when Sandra tweeted it. Part of the reason I started thinking about the Trump body count is the story of, and it's horrifying. Oh, and by the way, before I jump into this, thank you to Brian for answering Steve in New York's challenge. That takes us down to 4:25 to go to get even with the end of the evening. Another 25.
Thank you, Brian. Everyone,
thank you, Brian. Everyone, thank you. Another $30, and we're below 400, which means being below 600 tomorrow. A 41-year-old man from Detroit, really was from Detroit, is dead. His name was Jimmy Al Daoud. He spent the biggest part of his entire life in the United States. He didn't speak a lick of Arabic. He was diabetic. But when Nitwit Nero declared a jihad against people of Middle Eastern descent who weren't Israelis, ICE came along and swept him up and threw him out of the country. Despite having lived most of his life in the United States of America and being an English speaker and not a speaker of Arabic, well, he was an Iraqi national. He was born in Greece, and as a little bitty baby came to the United States. For Christ's sakes, his name was Jimmy. Okay?
Yeah.
Everybody knew him as Jimmy, because Jimmy is who he was. But in June, the ICE thugs came along, grabbed him up, and shipped him out of here, toot sweet. And he died in agony and misery, homeless on the streets of Baghdad.
Damn. He doesn't know anything about that culture, language. He doesn't speak Farsi or whatever they speak.
He was a Chaldean Catholic, quite possibly the oldest remaining Christian sect on earth.
Wow. Oh, shit. If they found that out, they beat the hell out of him.
An ICE spokesperson in Detroit said that Al Daoud had an extensive criminal history that involved at least 20 convictions from 1998 to 2017 and had twice been ordered removed from the U.S.
You know, so what? They're removing people because they have traffic tickets and you know, misdemeanors. And the president's one of the biggest criminals around. Sorry to say it. What the fuck is going on, man? We got to take control of this country. This is beyond politics now. This is about right and wrong. This is just crazy bullshit.
Well,
you know, I'm almost
you know how all the maggots are hooting about how, well, you know, it ain't about the precious holy sacred guns. It's about the mental health. His friend, Jimmy Aldo, Ood's friend, said his mental health was the primary reason for his legal issues that led to his deportation.
He made
a recording, and he said, immigration agents pulled me over and said, I'm going to Iraq. I've never been there. I've been in this country my whole life, since pretty much birth. They refused to listen to me. He went on and said, I've been homeless. I've been vomiting because I can't get insulin, and I can't speak the language in Iraq. I've been kicked while I sleep on the street. I begged the ICE agents. I said, please, I've never seen that country. I've never been there. But they forced me. There, Todd, there is, there goddamned well is, a Trump body count.
Proof, that's the proof. That is, Bob. I mean, we have
a criminally insane homicidal maniac in the White House.
No argument here. I don't know. What do people expect is going to happen? I mean, we knew, we predicted that there will be an uptick in racial hatred and racial violence and unrest from that way back that October before he was elected. We cannot function as a normal society much longer at this rate. I don't see how. I mean, this is all becoming very predictable now.
Well, you know, when you got Eddie Glaude out there, pretty much using terminology that I coined years ago, kind of says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought about you when he said "Cold Civil War." Yep. Wait, that's the thing now. See, it's like mainstream now. It's like, you know, this is not just fringe talk. You know, on our side now, it's like, no, the president is mentally ill. No, he is personally. I mean, and if we go back, personally engaging in verbiage and mannerisms that incite violence, and it does mean something when you, even if you're the worst president in the world, it does mean something. His words do matter. The time is now. So, they've already started the impeachment. Investigations, but I still fail to see how there's not enough time, because you know what, when you're at work, there's different types of work. I think, let's say you're writing grants for your department, you know, some days are gravy days. When you're on salary, some days are gravy days. You can take a 2-hour lunch, you know, things happen. But when it's time to sharpen the blades, you know, sometimes you have to work a 10 or 12 hour day. Because they can be working on the articles all through the day. You know, you just assign everybody a little piece, and then you assemble it. Because he's just breaking the law every fucking day. This has got to stop, and it's not just him now. That's why Barr has to go.
Well, Jesus, I mean, did you catch the part where it turns out now that somebody has video of him? I can't play it. But while he was supposed to be consoling the survivors in Dayton, instead,
he's talking about how many.
No, maybe it was El Paso. I think it was El Paso. He was going off, going on and on and on, blathering about Beto O'Rourke.
Exactly.
And it was so bad that some of the survivors flat out refused to be seen with him or see him.
They did. I mean, those are the reports that I've seen. Right. Where do you begin with this nonsense? That, you know, what do people think? What do you think is going to happen? We see it, we're like, I can't get any worse.
Yeah,
every 2 days it gets worse.
Well, again, we just had a shooting averted in Springfield, Missouri. Go online, the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Go online and see, because tis the season. Okay, it's August. It's fair and festival season. And continue into September. Massive state fairs in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio.
Yeah. Yep. And if you have a family, man, come on. It's little kids love, man. Children love to go to the fair. You know, that's the biggest carrot and stick. You know,
I mean,
if you don't behave, I'm not going to take you to the fair.
While Osama bin Laden was alive, I never not once spent a minute being terrified that I was going to be attacked by a 6'6" Arab with a portable dialysis machine. But on the rare occasions now, when we do go to the movie theater, I get the fucking creeps. Because I'm a sitting goddamn duck.
You are,
in
man.
In a state full of guns. In a state where you can buy a pistol and conceal it in your pocket, and it's legal, and you don't have a permit.
Oh, I forgot. What? No.
Yeah, I can walk into Rural King. I can buy me a Glock with a 19-round magazine, the double stack, and I can buy me some 9mm ammunition. And I can fill that magazine up and pop it in there and put one in the round in the chamber and drop that motherfucker in my pocket and walk around Beckley all day.
No wonder you don't like going out. Fuck that. That's insane, man. Oh, my God. And Walmart is terrible as it is. Oh, Jesus. We're in trouble. We've been in trouble. And you know what happens at the end of October? Halloween. Masks. Costumes.
Yep.
So what can be done? What can be done now? Where do we start right now? Right now.
You got to have the, so there's the governmental and the non-governmental side. Today in the New York Times, there was an editorial begging Walmart to stop selling fucking guns.
Mm-hmm.
A public letter by columnist Andrew Ross Sorkin to Walmart CEO Doug McMillon. You singularly have a greater chance to use your role as the chief executive of the country's largest retailer and largest seller of guns with greater sway over the entire ecosystem that controls gun sales in the United States than any other individual in corporate America. What happened over the weekend was not your fault, but it is your moral responsibility to see that it stops. The 22 people who died in your store this past weekend deserve more than words of consolation to their families. They deserve a leader who is going to work to make sure it never happens again. Well, that, what they're going to get is words of consolation to their families, because I guarantee double T you that small army of lawyers in Bentonville, Arkansas, is working overtime to cut down the amount of tort settlements to the people who were slaughtered, and more importantly, to the people who were maimed or maybe made orphans.
Well, you know what the other side is going to say immediately. They're going to say, you see, they're trying to take your gun.
Well, shit, they say that if it thunders outside. Oh, but Walmart is doing something. Walmart's doing something. They're cracking down on video games. According to Vice, Walmart stores are reportedly removing signing and displays referencing violence, including signage and playable demos for video games following recent shootings at two of its stores.
That's nothing. That's nothing.
Walmart stops selling guns, that is a free market partial solution.
Well, that'll help because, you know, a lot of these rural areas.
Dick's Sporting Goods is stopped selling assault rifles. And they seem to be doing okay. But I can walk into Rural King, and as long as I got the money and get through the paperwork okay, less than 30 minutes later, I can walk out with an assault rifle with a full clip, and I can carry that around all over West Virginia all day.
They sell those too. They sell the large magazines.
Oh, I told the story. I told the story maybe a year or so ago. I walked back there to the gun counter, and I prefaced the story by talking about how once upon a time I was in a jewelry store with a woman, a young woman, and she tried on a 2-carat diamond ring.
Damn.
And she started to sweat, and she broke out in hives, and her breathing quickened. Well, I remembered that story when I walked back to the gun area of Rural King, and I saw the same thing happen to a chubby fellow with a beard holding an AR-15.
Is that the real name for that store?
Rural King, yes.
That sounds like an Onion-esque name.
Oh, man, they got everything. They got every pet food ever made. They got pig food, cow food, horse feed. They got compressors and well pumps and tractors and doodads and inflatable hot tubs for out on the farm and guns and guns and guns and guns.
Well, that
and
sounds like, well, we have Tractor Supply.
Oh no, Rural King pees on Tractor Supply. You could fit four tractors.
I like to do that.
You could fit four Tractor Supplies inside one Rural King. It's like, I don't know. It's like the size of Saturn versus the size of Earth.
Damn. I bet people have a field day in there.
When Sears went belly up in Beckley, Rural King came in, and that was a big old anchor store Sears in a mall. And you walk into Rural King, there's always a sweet young girl who gives you a free bag of popcorn and says thank you for coming to Rural King. And you
you're get, kidding? And you, oh my god!
And you can get your Carhartts there.
Well, shit, that sounds like okay.
They got every kind of work boot known to the human mind.
Do they have the little tiny chickens like around Easter time?
Oh hell yeah! And they put out a sign, you know, chicks and ducks, chicks and ducklings are here.
Oh man, no Chinese allowed.
They sell kayaks and canoes, and riding mowers and tractors, and there's a fella sets up in the parking lot and sells chains, sells bears that he's carved out of logs with a chainsaw.
Damn, that sounds like a field day. That's a day trip.
Saturday mornings, the parking lot is packed.
Nothing else to do. I want to put one more grievance on the table really quick.
Okay.
Because this is worrying me now. Now, anyone who knows anything about American history knows that when economic times get tight, the folks on the bottom of the socioeconomic totem pole, especially if they're minorities, they get shit on extra hard. They get the worst turds on their head.
And yeah, when Wall Street gets the sniffles, the poor folks get Ebola.
Right, right. But now the Ebola is going to come with an extra dose of racism, because this stock market has always been shaky. It's all fraudulent anyway, but it's looking shaky. In other words, this economy can't keep going. It's just numbers on paper anyway. But if you notice, the stock market has been going down a lot recently. And with this trade war, it's not going to be pretty, because we're too intertwined with China now. There are no way around it now. We're in too deep with them. And these tariffs, you know, this is going to be a correction. It's coming. It's coming really soon, I think. If it just doesn't look good. And so when that happens, the markets are really going to go crazy. And then they're all gunned up. And, like you said, if you have 16 cars, at some point you're going to drive some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing you, but you get my drift, I suppose.
I do. I really do.
So, how close are you to getting your low-carbon steel wok to put over the hole in the acorn?
Man, that's just an idea right now. I haven't even had a chance to look.
Okay.
But, you know, if there's a... It'd be nice to have some time.
I know. There's other stuff going on.
Yeah, it'd be nice, to have some time to play with the grill this weekend. I don't know, though. Probably going to go to, probably going to have to go to Beckley and have to go to Charleston. I've got till like Tuesday to get into a car.
Yeah, no, you have other responsibilities at this point.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a brilliant idea, man. I wish there was more I could do because, you know, I'm not the only one saying this, but, you know, you do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. I really do.
You
really do.
You do, man. And you know, you believe, I'm pretty sure you believe in karma. I think.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's just it's the nature of things, you know. Try not, you know, try. If you don't want to get fucked, don't fuck other people. You know.
And, yeah, how hard is that?
Yeah. I know. Huh. Well, I tell you what, I'm glad you called because it helped me remember that I actually do have phones. I just didn't have playback, so it was a wonderful conversation. And I'll wish you a good evening, Todd.
And you too, and best wishes, and I hope that you stay well, and I hope everyone stays well, and you know, let's look for fall, look toward fall.
All we got in common, all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it.
Who said that again?
And that's a line from Mate One.
Oh, Mate One, right.
John Sayles.
I shouldn't know.
All right, Todd,
well,
you have a good evening, man. If I make something good happen on the grill, I'll put up the food porn pictures.
That'd be great.
All right.
That'd be great.
Talk to you later.
Take care, man.
Later now.
Peace.
Bye. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Hey, we got a 3-hour program in and 5 bonus minutes. Thanks, everybody. I didn't know if that was going to happen about 30 seconds after the show was supposed to start. I saw a note on social media. I think it was our buddy David in South Carolina, Stan. I said, no program. Then I said, yep, program after all. And then I saw the response, whiplash. And Bill in PA said, yeah, but the good kind. I love you guys. So back tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch, the fundraising goal for the overnight crew, if anybody's listening, will be $625. Thank you. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Later, y'all.